Well, as we come to this passage, we're just going to be thinking about laws. Who can tell me a rule they have in their school? Go on, Peter.
Don't get in fights.
Okay. Wow, very specific rule. Right. Don't get in fights. Any others? Martin.
I have to wear a tie.
Oh, Martin has to wear a tie. Wow, we're never having that rule. Okay. Yeah. Any other rules for any other schools? Go on, Thea.
Sit
nicely. Brilliant. And you're doing a great job. Okay. Yeah, go on, Rebecca. Be kind. Good. That's always a good one and covers all sorts of things, doesn't it? Right. Here's the big question, though. Why does school have those rules? Don't answer this one, okay? Just take a minute just to think about it. What are they trying to do? It's the same for adults, okay? Why do we have a 30-mile-an-hour speed limit? Why do we have a 70-mile-an-hour speed limit? Why do we have to pay tax? Why can't I just take something from someone else's house? Why are there lots of rules? That's the same as the rules about school. Are they imposed to curb freedom, to stop us enjoying ourselves and doing what we want? Or are they actually about protecting life and creating a society where most people can thrive? Now, I think we have a really weird relationship with rules and laws, don't we? Some of us love them. You know, we hate the kind of unknown. Just tell me what I need to do and how I need to do it. Give me a list of things. That's why some of us struggled so much with the pandemic, wasn't it? The rules kept changing, okay? Others of us hate rules. Why can't we just trust people to be sensible? Can I just say you don't have to look very far, do you, to realize why we can't do that? Sometimes we're actually totally contradictory and we think both those things at once. We want to be told what to do, but I don't want you to tell me to do that because I know better. Maybe that's you. But we rarely stop and really think about why exactly those rules exist. What's their goal? What are they aiming at? Now, I think we have the same struggle when it comes to the Old Testament law. We're about to, in Deuteronomy, if you look into chapter 5, we're about to look at the Ten Commandments. Okay? And what is God's aim with the Ten Commandments? That's what Moses is getting at here. Okay, he's introducing them in chapter 4 to why God gives the law. What's the purpose of God's law? Now, some of us might struggle because we think, well, why would God save his people from slavery and then effectively impose another load of laws? That means they're not free. Or maybe your question about Deuteronomy is, well, do you know, Al, why are we studying this? Because this is from centuries ago. It has absolutely no relevance to us at all. We are new covenant people, not old covenant people. Well, hopefully we'll answer a few of those questions or begin to in the next 2 or 3 weeks. The danger for us and for Israel is that if we don't understand why something is given, what it's aiming at, we won't listen to it. Or we'll misunderstand it. So having finished with lessons from Israel's past, which is what Moses is doing in chapters 1 to 3, he now turns to explain to them the purpose of God's law, why they should obey them, and what it will create. Here's the first thing this morning. It's this. Listen to God's life-bringing law. As Moses gathers Israel around him in verse 1, he calls on them to listen to the decrees and laws I'm about to give you. And then he tells us why in verse 1. Look at verse 1. Follow them so that you may live and may go in and take possession of the land that the Lord, the God of your ancestors, is giving you. Right at the start, Moses describes the law as life-giving. Follow them so that you may live. So that you know how to really thrive and enjoy life. God has saved his people from slavery and oppression in Egypt, and he wants to give them life. He wants them to take the promised land and thrive in the promised land. But God, better than anyone, knows the problem of the human heart. God knows that if you just let people off to do their own thing, actually their thriving tends to be about their thriving, not about everyone else's thriving. God is concerned to create a people that thrive together. And he knows that people aren't instinctively holy and loving. Think about this last week. Has everything you've done been about love for others? No, it hasn't, has it? I can't say that. You can't say that. God gives the law to teach us what it's like for us to love him and love others as ourselves. And look what he says in verse 2. He says, Israel mustn't edit God's law. Don't add to it, he says, and don't subtract from it. In other words, this law isn't like a menu where Israel can choose to keep commands 1, 3, 5, and 7, but bin off the rest. It's not like where they can just choose to take words and take it out or put it in. They mustn't sit, for example, when they read the bit about leaving the gleanings on the edge of their land. So when they've got a field and they've done their harvest, they're to leave the bit around the edge for the poor. They're not supposed to go, I don't like that bit. So I'm gonna ignore that bit. Okay. He's not suggesting they would edit it in practice by cutting it out with a pair of scissors, but that they would edit it in the way they lived. They mustn't add to or take away from the law. God's word is perfect. And in verses 3 and 4, Moses reminds them of the consequences of editing the law in the way they live it out. He takes them back to Numbers 25. And in Numbers 25, some Moabites come into the camp. And they lead the people of Israel. They lead them to commit idolatry. And instead of worshipping God, God's people, who've only just left the mountain, God's people worship other things. They break God's law. They break the Ten Commandments. They break the first commandment. And then they also break the later commandment as they commit sexual immorality, as they worship a fertility god. See, what happened, God knows. And God is holy and loving, so he judged his people's sin. He says, remember, some of you broke my law and you died. Some of you kept my law and you're still alive today, he says. So listen and hear God's law, but don't just hear it, do it. Don't edit God's law by choosing what you put into practice and what you don't. The law doesn't save Israel. It's really important we get this. Okay, God has already saved them by grace, by a Passover lamb dying in their place. They are God's blood-bought people, and they're to live in light of that. That's what the law shows them. This is how to be God's blood-bought people. Life is found in being God's holy people, in his holy presence, trusting his promises. Now, as we think about that for us as a society, we like to think we're progressive, don't we? Do you know what that means? That means that we look back at previous generations and judge them. Because we like to think we're better. How could society then have thought that when we know so much better now? Okay. Although we don't spend very much time thinking, okay, if that's what we're doing, how will people in 50 years' time look back at us? What will they be horrified that we have done? And that sense of progressiveness particularly creates a struggle for those of us who are Christians, especially when we come to God's law. Because if we naturally think everything's always getting better, things are evolving and we are morally better now than we were then, when we come to God's law, we're going to be thinking, okay, God's law needs an update. God's law needs modernizing. God's law often makes us uncomfortable when it clashes with our society's values, doesn't it? Don't you find that? Yet over marriage or divorce or the taking of life, an issue like abortion or euthanasia or sex and relationships, don't we often find ourselves wishing we could edit God's word? Wouldn't it make the Bible and God so much more palatable to our friends and family and society if we could just take out some of the things that God says? Or if we could add something in? But look at verse 2. Do not add. Do not subtract, but keep, he says. Why? Because God is holy, eternal, and sovereign. God does not change, and God does not need to make progress. God isn't becoming more holy, like the way we imagine our society is getting morally better, because God is absolutely morally perfect. And because he's sovereign and all-knowing, he knows the end from the beginning. And that means that as he gave these laws to the people, he knew every place throughout history where they would clash with culture. God knew when he was speaking these words to Israel. that they were clashed with culture in the 60s, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and for us. He knew exactly the areas where they would clash, but he still gives his word because it is true. We've got to remember, these words, these laws, clashed for Israel with the cultures around them. It called for them to be radically different to every other people group on the face of the planet. It clashed with the culture in the Roman Empire when Jesus taught it. It clashed with the cultures that Paul and Peter wrote to. That's why they spend so much time outlining how God's people are to be holy and to be different. And so often they do so with words